This is Sunday, June 11th, 1995, in Pixley, California. This is Kent Kirkton interviewing Antonio Saludado from Delano for the United Farm Workers Oral History Project. Ms. Saludado, when and where were you born?
Okay, I was born in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I'm original from Mexico, from Jalisco. In 1957, we came to the United States. My father is from Morenci, Arizona. And when they decided they were going to come to the country, it was in 1956 when they came, my mom and my father. They decided that we were going to change our life to come to the United States. And so since 1957, we got to the country and not knowing what we were expecting into this country. We came and we started, like I was a little girl at that time, and I went to school. They brought us over here. My daddy brought us over here because my aunts and my uncle, Paulo and Beatriz Saludado, they live in Early Mart. So my father, since we were so many in our family, he decided this is the time to go over there to the small town. And so he brought us over here. And we've been living in Early Mart and Delano. We don't change towns. Unless for some reason we had to go someplace else, then we go someplace else, but we come back to the same towns.
What was your father's name?
My father's name is Lorenzo Saludado.
And your mother?
And my mother, Petra Arámbula Salute Saludado. That's my mom and my father's name. And we came. Then they decided we were going to go to school, and I didn't spoke not even one word in English. My God, it was so hard for me to learn how to speak English. And I started going to school. And I went to school till about when I was in seventh grade, I decided I had to quit school. It was hard for me. But the hardest part was that I had more sisters behind me that they needed more school than I did. So I was all getting older. So I got out when I was 14, 15 years old from school, and I decided to help my dad, to help him up and get the other rest of the children getting out to go to school and to finish at least high school.
And what was your father doing?
We were picking grapes. My father, he was an irrigator, but at that time we were going like, I don't know if you ever heard the migrant workers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we came over here. My family was so big, and big in the way that we were nine and children. But we were not big enough to do other jobs around this area. So the only way we can do it was just picking plums, and we were going to. They took us to Santa Rosa, Yuba City, Hillsburg. We were going to all those places to pick plums. And every year we're going over there until we grow up. We got older and we decided that this is the time that we were going to go into the grapes. But at that time it was so hard for us because in a way there were not very much grapes around this area. So we were doing whatever we could. When we were not picking grapes, we were picking gondolas because there was not very much. That was the only thing we could get. At that time, there was a lot of. In this area, there were used to be a lot of camps with a lot of people that came from Arabia or Filipinos. They were living in the camps. And then in other places, there were the Bracero, when the Bracero program came. And there were a lot of people in the camps. So they had their people to work with. you know, and we were just living here, but at the same time we didn't have no other jobs. But here we are, you know, my dad used to take us, when we start going to work in hourly wages, we start going to the cottons, to the cotton fields. And it was very hard for us. We start getting heat problems. There was a lot of heat, there was no water in the fields. There was no toilets. And we stopped going to picking plums because that was the only time we were doing this. We stopped going over there because it was going over there just taking chances if we were going to go to work or not. Before we were going over there, my dad used to go over there and find the place we were going to stay. And if he saw that there was a lot of, you know, harvest, then it was going to be good for us. So everybody was happy. When we were going, we were crying because we didn't want to go over there. But at the same time, we were happy because we knew that coming back, we had money. So every time we were going over there, we used to go in this little car. I guess it was about 1955 Chevy. I don't know how we fed in there. But we carry flour, and we carry potatoes, we carry, well, the most important things that the Mexican eats, you know, like beans. And we didn't have to worry about corn or chiles, tomatoes, because in those places over there, the grower already grew up their chiles and the tomatoes because they know that the Mexican like that. So they have squash already growing over there. So, and then when they had cows, they give us some milk over there. And so in a way, we were happy because we were going to this place. One time we got to this ranch, and it was close to the river. And we used to go and pick plums for an hour, 2 hours, and then we ran to the river. And we just went and got wet and then come back again and pick. My daddy used to just look at us and they said, why don't you get cold? Why don't you get it hot? Just, you know, it's really tough. We can care less. We were so young. We didn't know. We were just in a happy way, you know. And as soon as we grow up, it was a different story. We stay here. And like I said, we went to the cotton fields and do all this job, and we're sweating and no water. No, if it was no water, you think it was going to be cold water. Well, it's just no water at all. If you were carrying water, you were carrying. But if you didn't carry it, there was no drinking way to be for us to drink water. But one time, in one of the years, we were going to the chopping sugar beet.
Mm-hmm.
That sugar beet, it was the hardest thing in my life. That it was kind like you get a small hole.
A short handle hole?
Yes. And we used to chop that. Well, there were five of us and we wanted to go far away. We used to get up early in the morning and go and look and see if we were going to go and get the job. And we did it. We were so, in a way, we were so poor that we used to use some tennis shoes. And the tennis shoes and the hard dirt. Well, you didn't get out with those tennis shoes on that day because it was already tore up. So we used to come out with a lot of blisters on our feet. And it was so hard for me because one time, all of them were working so hard. And my dad told me, he said, you know what? This, in this area, you know, where the sand is at, it's more faster way to do rows. And I said, Dad, why don't you go and get a lot of rows? He said, no. He said, because it's going to be hot pretty soon. And I told them, no, come on, I'll help you. They were not big rows, but they were big, you know, certain different extent of the rows. And I do remember that day, I made 32 rows. And when I got up, when you shop that sugar beet, you had to go straight, bend over, and just go straight. You can't get up, because if you get up, then it hurts your back later on. And then if you go up and down, it just not work, you know. So I did 30 rows that day. And when I sat down, I told my daddy, I said, Dad, could you get the money from, you know, from what I make? I said, well, how many rows you made? I said, I made 32. Here's the little paper. They already, you know, they marked the rows, and I said, this is what I made. My feet, they were so blissed up. It was coming blood from my feet. And I do remember the labor contractor. His last name is Galleta. He turned around and he told my daddy, if she doesn't get into the line, she's not going to get paid. So she has to come and stand up in the line. And I couldn't hardly make up myself, because I was so hard for me. I was crying. And I told my daddy, I said, but that little bastard is not going to let me stand up. He's going to let me stand up in the line. Can he give you the money for me? He said, no, you have to come. So I went over there. And that hard day, I don't think I can never in my life I forget that day. That was the hardest day in my life. Making those rows and not getting paid, my daddy couldn't get my paycheck. It was not even paycheck, they pay you cash. So it was no difference, you know, if they pay you or not, you know, they were gonna give him cash. So anyway, my daddy turned around and said, okay, he said, well, you have to go, so I hold you up. And I took me over there, I got my pay, and then we came home. When we were coming home, I went to sleep, and my daddy was sad because everybody was so tired. Well, this isn't the sugar beet. At least we did something. But when it came to go and pick potatoes, the potatoes, you have to go and pick the potatoes. And that's the hardest part. In picking potatoes, you have to put a belt with two hooks in here in the front to hook up your sacks and bend over and pick the potatoes. Well, that was okay if you had potatoes, but when you didn't have no potatoes, you had to look it in through the under the rocks. That's kind of tough. Your hands are really blistered up. Well, one day we went into this potato area. We were picking potatoes, and they didn't have no potatoes. We didn't got not even about, we were about six of us picking potatoes, and we didn't even make $5 in the whole day, from 3 o'clock in the morning till about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That day, we were so sad, because we couldn't make anything, you know. And my daddy turned around and he said, every day we do something. Oh, and matter of fact, every day when we were making something, some box in there, you know, we used to stop by the little store and buy soda. Kids, you know, they just get satisfied with the soda because, you know, it's just a kid, you know. And we were satisfied just for the soda or little cookies or something. That's it for us. But that day, we couldn't stop by. And we just looked the store and we just passed it by because we couldn't even go and buy a soda. And my daddy, I saw my daddy, he just looked at the store and he looked at us and we were just like laying down in the car. And he got really sad. He got really sad. He had his tears in his eyes. He said, this is not one of the days that it worked for us. And it was so hard. It was hard because We got home and my mom had some tortillas made up. And then she said, well, how was the day today? My daddy turned around and said, don't ask, because nobody's going to answer you. And he just said, maybe tomorrow we're going to do the different thing. Yeah, the following day we went to another place, and there was a lot of potatoes, but there was no water. And close by that potato area, it was an alfalfa. And it was Saturday, because my brother, it was younger than me, he went with us to pick potatoes, and it was so hot. In those years, I don't know, it was so hot, it was about 100, temperature 100, a little bit higher than that. And my brother was so hot that he went into the alfalfa and cut alfalfa and put him in his head. And there was no water. So what he did, he just went like, you ever see the dogs when they trying to dig? Mm-hmm. Okay, my brother got into the car and dig and dig and dig with his hands and got alfalfa, and he just went inside because there was just no cool place at all. Anyway, we came home. We made good. So we stopped by the store and we got our sodas and nachos. And we got home, and my daddy just started to think, you know what, vieja? It's hard. But there's no place we can go right now because they're so young. We cannot do anything else. And my mom, she was so satisfied. She says she was a very good, my mom, she passed away. So now I'm talking about when she was alive. She said, you know what? He said, we're going to make it. We're going to make it, he said. I don't know how, he said, but the Lord is with us, and we're going to make it. Yeah. It came to the time that then we started going to the grapes.
Well, how old were you when you were working the potatoes, do you think?
Okay, I was 13.
13?
Uh-huh. I was, because when I came over here to this country, I was 11 or 12 years old. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. When I came to this country, it was that age. I went to school, but in the time of the vacation, we used to pick potatoes because that's when we're used to go to the area of picking plums. Because the potatoes finished, and then it came to the time to go to picking plums, and then we went over there. So we had, actually the migrants, they never stopped working. You know, you're always looking for one thing and then another thing and then another thing. So when we were coming from the plums, then we came over here and went to the gondolas, you know. And we finished the gondola and that was it. There was nothing else. Then it came the winter time. They came the cotton to pick cotton. But my God, I didn't like to pick cotton at all. I didn't. I sit and cry. I didn't like it. We were going in that picking cotton in the weekends. And my daddy used to tell us, when you keep, if you get a lot of cotton, we might be able to go and buy something else, you know, like they always give us more support. Yeah, well, yes, we're going to do it. I didn't like it. That's one thing I never like it to do. I like the other I didn't ever like the other things anyway, but I had to do it. You know, I didn't have any other choice but the cotton. I just had to sit out and cry because I didn't like it. So this is how it is, you know. Migrants mm-hmm. move from one area to another and then come back and stay in that place. If they got a place to stay there, so they stay. And we had, since we came over here, we had a place to stay because my uncle owned two little houses, you know, and that's why we were always came back to Early Mart. And at my age of 15, 16, then I started working on the fields. picking grapes. Mm-hmm. This is just when I started picking all the time. I didn't went to school. I just stopped completely going to school. I went to pick grapes to help the rest of them, my family. And we used to finish picking grapes. We started in winter tying vines, and then we finished tying vines, and we got to this place, the Guimara Vineyards. They used to give us a job. We tie vines, and then we take the scars, I guess. They take them off out of the vineyards so they won't grow old. Mm-hmm. We take them. So we have work all year, almost all year around. We're always working. And from that, we never pick grapes with them. We always did tipping and unbunching the grapes and all kinds of other jobs, except for picking grapes. We never picked there. We always had to go to someplace else. So my dad, it was one of the persons that when he brought us back over here, usually when we were in Mexico, he was in L.A. All this time he was working over there all the time. When we moved over here, well, it was something else. But my dad always knew that there were different life and different areas. But when he took us to pick grapes, he saw there was no future. He keeps saying it's hard work. You have to go study and study hard so you can get out of the fields. But we can never do it because we didn't get too much money, or I didn't understand very well. You know, I was one of the youngest ones that I was just doing what my daddy was telling me to do. But then we got to this place, which is another ranch, and it called Champa Garulo. We used to work with him all the time. And we started looking at him like he used to treat us really bad. And this is, we're talking about 1960. We got there in 1960. This man started talking to us really in bad, and with bad mood. The man used to come out and tell us all kinds of things. He talked really bad. And my daddy, he just turned around and looked at him, but he never said anything. He was angry. My daddy used to get very mad. But he said, but there's nothing we can do about it, you know. Because 2 years before that, there were two groups, but I can't remember the guy's name. They came trying to get into they were talking about to get an organizer or something like that. And I'm personally, I never got interested in that situation. Oh, I knew that these two guys that used to come, and then all of a sudden I heard that they just took off with the tools. That's it. Then a little bit later, about 1962, 63, I believe, we heard there was somebody else coming. And my daddy used to get so angry when we used to go to work. My daddy used to say that if we had somebody to help us, we didn't have to be in this shape. But we didn't know. I didn't know what he was talking about. I didn't understand what was going on. Oh, I knew that I was going to work, and I give my check to my dad, and that was it. They take care of me. I just heard that. And all of a sudden, one day, a man and a woman came by to the house, and they introduced themselves as Dolores Huerta in Cesar Chavez. And he said, we came and talked to you guys to see if you're interested, because we were, and see, we were, and my family was my mom, my mom, Petra, my dad, Lorenzo, Maria de Los Angeles, which is, we nicknamed her Chata, Dio Gracia, as my other one, sister, and then myself. There were five of us, so they were interested to see if we were kind of like get into this organization that they call the UFW at that time. And she started talking to us, and he started talking to us. And I personally, I was not interested because I was young. I didn't know what was going on, and I just walked out and left them, you know, left them talking to my dad. And my daddy was the, since he was the head guy, so he was going to tell us what was right, what was wrong. And so I just took off and went outside, and I left them talking to him. And then from there on, this couple used to come every weekend, or like every other week or something like that. And then one day my dad said, she said, hey, come on, let's get interested in this. My older sister, she turned around and she said, ah, that's another bunch of liars, you know. This other two guys that they just took up with the money. So who's going to put attention to these two guys? I mean, to this woman, to this man. And he said, yeah, no wonder. This is how we are, the way we are, because nobody was interested in it. He said, well, sit down and I'm going to let you know what's going on. And my sister, she just, like, we were more interested to go to the dance. That was our fun, you know. We asked my daddy if he was going to let us go to the dance, and Cesar and Dolores, they was just intruding in there, you know. So he just walked up and said, oh, I don't know what the hell they're doing, you know. Why can't they just leave us alone, you know? But then at the same time, like the following week, something happened to us in the fields. And then we start looking into it, like, these people that are doing something is unique, as organization. And my older sister, she was the one that she was talking to my dad all the time. She was the one that, the head of the house. I said, Daddy, I said, what's going on? I said, what's this man or this lady doing? He said, well, listen, this is an organization. They're trying to organize people to get it together so we can get better wages. Because so far right now, we're getting a 95 cents an hour. And that's not very much. We can hardly survive with this. Comes winter time, we don't have no money safe at all. Well, and then we start, well, yeah, could be true. We just keep on going. Then one day, we heard that they were really getting people into it. And they start getting more interesting, my dad. Then they got this little place, a little right in Garces. It's a little church. I'm not exactly sure what the church's name is, but they start calling people to go to the church. And I'm sorry. It's just in Albany Street. It was this little church. It was the community. There were black people there. And they let us borrow the church so we can have meetings there. The very first meeting we went over there, we were not very many. I'll say that I remember that I saw inside. We were about 100 people, not very, very much. Maybe it was less. And they start talking about, let's get union, let's get into the union. And I start thinking, well, a union or organization. But I didn't know what, you know, what to think of. What was the organization? What was the union? And then they decided to make another meeting. And the other meeting, there was a lot of people. And I said, uh-oh, it's going better. But we were not clear enough yet. Then my daddy finally, he sat down and talked to us. He said, you know what? He said, right now, we're in a situation that we go to the fields. He said, if you recall, the other day we asked the labor contractor, we asked him how much he was going to pay us for the gondola. And what did he say? And then we remember what he said. He said, if you don't like it, he said, just get the white line, it's over there. Like, going home, if you don't like it, go home. He said, and that's not the point. The point is that if we're going to go into work, we want to know how much we're going to get. How much is we going to be able to get? And if we decide it, if it's going to work this way, fine. If it doesn't, then we can ask, hey, come on, you're getting more money than I do. Why are you getting more money? We're the ones that were making you the money. So we have to know what how much is. But see, we're coming to find out that my daddy, he used to belong to a union in Los Angeles when he used to work over there. So see, we didn't know. Until that time, he said, I used to belong to the union, to the steel workers, a union in Los Angeles. And I didn't work for this money. And I didn't bring you guys over here to be squeezed. Now, if these people are trying to do something, let's help. Let's help. Let's get together. And let's see what's going on. Let's see if we can do it. But let's try it. Let's not stop trying it to do something. Well, we were not too clear yet. It took us a long time. I mean, this is a Mexican that it was very, very, very hard. And so then my dad gave us all these preachers up and everything else. The following year, which is, this is in 1960, I'm talking about 1963, we had an experience. 1963, when they killed Kennedy, we got an experience that day. We were working for this company called Marco Sananovich. And this company hired us to go and pick gondola. And Marcos told my father that he was going to pay us in the first grape picking, he was going to pay us $9 a ton. And $13 the second, okay? So, but he didn't see inside of the grapes if they were the second hand, it was not very much grapes, or there were a lot of grapes. So he was just going by what they just saw in the outside of the rows. Well, at that time, we went and start picking. The first week in my family, my brother, that was in time of vacation, a few days before school, we went to pick gondola. And my goodness, we were making a lot of money. I mean, we were making a lot of money because we were talking to the grower. We were not going in through. We didn't have no labor contractor in between. Mm-hmm. We were going to the head guy. And that head guy was paying us $13 a ton, the second crop, and that first $9. So we were making money. But when he saw that we were making money, he came over and told my father, Lorenzo, what are you going to do with all this money that you're making? He said, I think that's too much money. You're not going to be able to do, you know, things. You don't know how to react with so much money. You know how much money was that? We make that time, I do recall that with the five, six of us, we make $1,000 in the week. And this is in 1963, you know. Then another guy came over, which is the labor contractor, and he said, how much they pay you? And we told him. And my dad asked him, how much did you pay to the other people over there? Because we were in the young vines, and they were in the old vines, because then the gondola breaks them off, you know. So how much you pay? He said, $6. $6? He said, yeah, this is first and this is second. And that's a matter. We were making in the second crop of the grapes, we were making it real good. Then my daddy started thinking, so this is how it's going on. So the grower came over and he said, you know what? I'm going to drop the price. What do you mean you're going to drop the price? He came and talked to my daddy. He said, what do you mean you? I said, yeah. He said, you're making too much money. He said, listen, this is my problem. If I run my money, fine. If you don't, he said, that's not none of your problem. I got a lot of family to support in here. They said, no, I'm going to drop it, all of it, at $9. Take it or leave it. This is what he said. And my dad said, well, this is the only thing we have to do it. We got up and we told my dad and said, you're teaching us how to be together and look what you're doing. He said, come on, let's go home. And we dropped everything and we went home. We went home, we stayed home, we stayed about 3 or 4 days at the house. The grower knew that we were doing a good job in the vineyards because the vineyards that were very thin, there were a lot of grapes, and we were doing the neatest job. We were doing very carefully not to break the branches. He sent another guy to come and tell us to go back to work. And my daddy told me, he said, for the same price? He said, yeah. He said, no, we're not going. Well, the grower came to my dad's house and told him, come on, Lorenzo, I leave you the same price that I give you the first time. My daddy said, okay. He went and talked to us. He said, well, yeah, let's go. Went to work. But that's when we find out what was going on, really, really good. We start picking grapes. We start, this is already time of finish the picking season. And all of a sudden, again came Caesar and Dolores, and my daddy was more interested and more tied into it. 1964. In 1965, they make another meeting, that was a humongous meeting. And
where was that?
In 1965.
Where?
In Guadalupe Church. They made that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, are you guys ready? Well, this is because we didn't know, we saw that they had a strike started in Coachella, somewhere in Coachella. And we heard there were a lot of people, there was something going on over there. And then all of a sudden they said, well, they win it. Okay, they win the strike. And Caesar said, well, what did they win? He said, well, they raised the wage. He said, but what else they did? Nothing, they just raised the price. They said, no, we want something to sign out and say that it's going to be there. The price is going to be, the wage is going to be there. Then it's not going to drop there. It's not going to lower than that. So then they came, all the Filipinos, the AWOC union, came to Delano. This is the organization of the Filipinos. They came to Delano, and they were in a strike. They struck right away in Delano. And we heard they were in strike. And we were working And we saw all the Filipinos, they were punching tires and everything. They were trying to get the people out. And that's when the meeting came up, Caesar. He said, no. He made it a small meeting. He said, what do you guys think, you know? You think that we are already enough to strike out? And my daddy said, well, we have to find out. You have to make another meeting, a huge meeting, and see where we can make it. So the first, they said, okay, let's make it in the park. And somebody said, no, let's make it in the Guadalupe Church hall. They said, well, we'll see if we can do something about it. Then the 8th of September, the Filipinos, they were in the strike. And we were like, we wanted to do it, but we didn't want it to do it. We didn't know how the people that were going to react. And they called for a meeting to see how many people that were going to show up. And this hall is a humongous hall. We didn't expect that we're going to show up so many people. They were outside the people. And then they decided, they said, you guys think that we're ready to go on strike? We're going to go for another week. And let's see what you guys think. And he said, well, let's get into the strike. And they give us certain days to, you know, to think about it. I said, okay. So the 16th of September, we're on strike. And my goodness, that strike is started. And they started, okay? We didn't start it, because there were some people they stayed and some people that went on. We were more like underground organizers inside in the fields. Mm-hmm. Well, the people that were outside, they were suffering a lot. But I think the people inside that we were organizing inside, I think it was worse, because the companies that were hitting us all this time, they were saying, you know, these people, they're doing that, and that people is doing this, and they do the same companies, they send people to do a lot of stuff in our cars, and they said, see, the people from outside, they doing it. They came and do it for you. They came and do, look at how much damage they did it. And we turn around and we say to the people, that's not true. They did it. They paying to these other guys to do it. So we were having like people against us and people there. And finally, one day in this company, Caesar and Dolores, they were outside or talking to the people inside, like with scabbies, you know. And I told them, I said, see, I said, come and see my car. And I had all these people and the foreman said, you come and see my car. My car had, like, they went into the bathroom in my car and they just split it, everything in there. And I told them, I said, the people from outside, they didn't do it. And I know, I already got witness that they didn't do it. You guys did it and you paid for it. And I said, because you paid for it, I said, you're going to clean my car and you're going to clean it good. And this has happened to us. Here it happened on my car. Other people, they said, no, they didn't. We were organizing, and some of the people that were for us and some of the people that were against us, but at the same time, we were showing the way that they were doing us to us. Finally, it came to the time that it came, the pruning. In the pruning, we were suffering too, because we were organizing. And the foremen there used to tell us, are you against them? Are you for them or you are against them? And used to say, okay, let me tell you one thing. I used to tell them, I said, you think they're doing bad? There are a bunch of laziness, a bunch of people there. They're go to the welfare. At that time, they started the welfare, giving some money to the people in the welfare. And we told him, he said, no way. Because we knew Vasquez, you know, those people, they just got up. Those two men, they talked today. Vasquez, Manuel Vasquez. He was one of the persons, one of the family that we knew for a fact that they were the strongest people. They worked year around. And they were outside in the lines. And we used to tell them, that people, the workers, and that's other family. There were lots of families that we knew. We used to mention, I see this family and this other one, this other. They're not supported by the welfare. They're workers. And they're there because they're doing something good. So it came to the time, and foreman, she told me, she says, I think you're one of them. And I said, and if I'm one of them, so what? What are you going to do about it? And she said, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I said, that's right. There's nothing you can do about it. Because they're outside, and they're fighting for me, and I'm inside over here, and I've been trying to do something about it, too. So you don't have anything to do. He said, well, we'll see about it. I said, what are you going to do, fire me? I'm already fired. I'm gone. No, she didn't fire us. We finished, and it came that they were going to take up to the march, and we told Sister, we would like to go to the march where we meet. He looked at us and said, you know what? No, I need people over here too. So you have to go, you have to go into the picket lines here. At that time, they started the boycott for the Chanley Corporation. Mm-hmm. People in the march, and we need people in the boycott. And they said only one person for the boycott, because we didn't have people, you know. Everybody was different mm-hmm. areas, so we stayed on the picket line. And then a little bit later, I think it was the other side of Fresno. My brother went into the march. He came now, back.
Are you still working with your father in the fields and stuff?
No.
Okay.
No. We already finished the time by.
Well, but I mean, you were still working. When you were working, it was still with your father.
Yes.
In the same
uh-huh.
fields.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. We stopped working. And then my brother, which is my brother is younger than me, Francisco. He was friend of Freddy Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
And Freddy and another, his cousin, they went to the march. When he came back, he was so excited. He went and talked to my dad, and he told him, he said, Daddy, you know what? And that march is really interesting, because all you see is a lot of campesinos, they coming in, and that's a lot of people, a lot of support. He said, you're going to like it if you go over there. We got more excited. We wanted to go, but we couldn't. And so then we decided, this is it. Either we're going to go to the march, or we're going to stay here. But we're going to get up. We're going to get up, and we are not coming back to the fields. No more. No more until either something else happened. My older sister, Maria, that's what she told my dad. She said, this is it. We had to make one decision. Either we stay or we're going. My daddy said, okay, you guys go. Well, Maria and myself, we went. And one of my aunts that you met today, mm-hmm. she's my aunt. We just left. And from that time until 1970, that I myself, that they were came and signed the contracts for the first time, the growers that were going to sign contracts, I got out. I didn't completely got out, but I got married. So my story from that time, it was different. But we went into the march, and we see so many supporters. We see so many things that we never seen it before, and we thought that that was more support, more alive, everything, you know, that we have more chances to do something about these other people that stay inside. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because there were a lot of people, too, that they wanted, but they couldn't. Yeah. And there were a lot of farm workers outside. They didn't care too much if they were going to lose cars, they were going to lose their homes, they were going to lose. They can care less. They just quit and went. So that's what we did, too. So we went in the march. We finished the march. We came back. And then we start organizing. Oh, but this time, we had the boycott for Chenli.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chenli Company, we were going in the middle of the year. Said 150 miles. When they said that they were called Caesar to sign the contract. Oh, we were more excited. And then other unions came over. They couldn't believe it. That 6-7 months it took us to sign contract. He said never in our lives before that other different unions that were organizing, they signed they took years to get the first contract. So we got more excited. We said, oh, we just gonna do it. So we got Chenli, and then we had people that they have a lot of family. Some of them, they went to work for Chenli. And my father was one of the persons, he went to work for Chenli. And we stayed out of the fields, me and my sister. We told him, you go to work and we stay out. We're just going to have to help him, help ourselves to see what we can do. He said, okay. And so he went to Chenli. He worked for Chenli for so many years in contract. And then people start tasting the contract, you know, that there was good wages, there was good treatment, that nobody can tell them anything. There was no way they can tell them, hey, you know, you're just doing this wrong and you're being fired. No, no, no. Contract, it was a contract. The longest a person chose their job, good respect, they had the job. And that's a contract. And that's where we start seeing that union, it was good. That's when we start tasting the union much better to see that was the best thing to do. We came back from the march, and then Caesar said, you know what? The second head we're going to get is DiGiorgio Corporation. My goodness, that company was humongous, tremendous, bigger. They start sending organizers everywhere, but first we start in Delano. Delano, we start organizing. We used to get up in the morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, follow the trucks where they carry the people, and throw the leaflets they call the mosquito. And we used to throw them to them, just to give them the news what was going on. Some people they caring, some people they didn't. And we start organizing and getting people, and they used to get out, you know, get out from the, to go on strike. We just barely organized 100 people. By the following 2 days or following day, they bring people from Mexico. So we didn't have no end to be organizing. And it was just humongous. And Caesar said, well, let's do a boycott. Maybe a boycott you know, hurt him again. Yep. They went to a boycott. We started doing boycotts in L.A., San Francisco, everywhere. Every city you can name it, we had people. We were going to those boycotts, me and my sister. And we went to organize. Then they cut us for organizers. They teach us how to organize. Fred Ross came and give us classes for organizing and to see if we would be able to do it, because we were so ignorant. I didn't speak the language, you know. So then decided, okay, let's put people to organize. Cesar, he was very, very, very bright man. He said, in the camps, in the women's camps, men has to go in there. In the men's camps, women has to go there. And then he used to say, I need some volunteers to go into this camp of men. And he used to just look at us, each other, and he used to say, you. I said, sister, you used to say that volunteers, and you didn't volunteer. I didn't give myself as a volunteer. He said, but you're going over there. I said, okay. That's the way it goes by. He used to send us to the camps and organize. Well, we started organizing all this company. When we just barely got in all these people, the Teamsters came. And that was a different story, because there was another bunch of people that we had against us. And we had to really concentrate on the people. They were concentrating on us. For us not to go inside, but we were concentrating on them, because the only way we can do it, get up in the morning, get into our cars and throw papers, and then find a way that we can organize 3 or 4 people from the camps, and we can say, well, she's my friend, I come and visit her. And we went and visit her, and we just get a lot of people in there, you know, 3 or 4 people. But as soon as they see that there was people from outside, they came up and threw us out. So it has to be, Caesar said, it has to be a different way to do it. Let's get them out of the camps. But how? Well, we get to friends, and we used to tell them, come on. Would you want to come and meet me outside, and we go and drink Coke, or we go into the park? You can bring 2-3 friends with you in your car. You can bring. This is the way we did it. And then they stopped that way. They stopped them to come in outside. Then they said, "How are we gonna do it?" Okay, the people from the camps, they were okay because they were just there. And people that were already organized, that they already started.
It was the Teamsters that were locking down the camps?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then what Caesar gave us the idea, you know what we're going to have to do? What? We're going to follow each car. If they live outside of the camps, we're going to follow them to the houses, because we don't have no addresses. We used to go over there. And now every people, they get into their cars, we used to follow them and fly, because they were flying. And we had to follow them, so to know where they live, we get the address, we knew what was their name it was. And then later on, when they were already, you know, resting, we catch them there. It was just like, it's an example. It's like that Jehovah's Witness, they come to the houses. We used to do it every day, you know. I said Jehovah's Witness because that's the only ones, mm-hmm, they go to the houses, all mm-hmm. right? And we started doing that. And they send us, okay, then we organize all these people. And all of a sudden, the company decided to throw all the people out. And they start bringing people from Mexico, from Mexicali, from Ciudad Juarez, and buses. I used to put, and we knew that they were going to bring all these people because the way we had people organized it in the camps, we also had foremen already given us the word that they were going to bring people and what time they were going to come in. We used to make picket lines and waiting for the buses. And we used to laying down in the ground to see if they didn't pass us. And sister used to come on. They're just going to kill us one of these days. One of these days is going to kill some of you, and it's just not right. But they did kill some of them, but in that time they didn't do nothing. And we start back again organizing people, and they used to throw them out again. Finally, they decided, okay, we got so much people organizing, and we got so many carts reorganized. And, you know, I had to give them NLRB had to arbitrate.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they call that?
Mm-hmm.
To get some elections.
Mm-hmm.
And said, okay, if they got so much people, they had to. And they got certain days to certain days that these people can be able to vote. They came to the second elections, and we won it. We were happy. But by this time, we were suffering a lot, you know. We used to go through so many things that the Teamsters did to us. They used to call us names. They used to beat some of our organizers. My mother, it was one of the ladies that we had a little station wagon outside. That was Cesar Chavez station wagon outside of one of the camps in the Giorgio. They put him outside, and they put a Virgen of Guadalupe. And every night we used to get together and we used to pray. Every night. Until the end, where the elections came out. But they used to come and throw us things, water, spitting us, and trying to run over us, and all kinds of things. My mom used to be there almost day and night. She was in the picket line
mm-hmm.
there. And it was one of the places that they couldn't take it off, you know, because it was just far away. So she stayed there, my mom and my aunt. And they used to get out from there and used to go and make tortillas and bring over to some of the huelguistas and bring some water. They did so many things with this, some young kids. I mean, my two little sisters, they were little tiny ones, and they had to go back and forth. And then from the Giorgio, then we had another camp in Lamont. And we went to Lamont, me and my sister. We were part of the group of the organizers. And we organized there. And a month or 2 months, they give the election. And we win the election. And we had the Teamsters that they keep following us everywhere we were going. One of the Teamsters, he came up and told me that if I didn't leave the camp alone, that he was going to kill me. But when he was telling me that, I don't know, from somewhere, jumped a man with a knife in his hand. He told me, he said, you tried to do something to this girl. He said, you are not going back alive. And I told him, I said, please don't, because we don't believe in violence. We did so much already, and we cannot lose it in 5 seconds. So just stay away. It's all right if you just stay with me, but don't do nothing. They call us so many things that one of the organizers from New York, he saw that man, that he threatened me. he went outside when they were outside already out of the job. They went to a bar and he saw him over there. He beat him up so bad. He said, "Don't you ever try to get close to the girls that we got organizing." And the foreman, the supervisor there is Marquez. He went and told my sister, he said, "You know what? You're just a bunch of prostitutes. Why don't you just come to my camp and stay there and get some money? So don't be in that stupid line over there." My sister told me, she said, "Marquez, let's make a bet. If we win this election, what are you going to do?" He said, "I promise you, I get out of here." "You will?" I said, "Yeah, I get out of here. If you win, I get out of here, and I stay away from your union problem." "Good, because we are going to win. And I promise you, we are winning. The next 2 days in that election, we are going to win. So you better start packing up your stuff because you're going to leave." When the election came, we win. We win, and Marquez came over and he talked to my sister and he told her, "You're right. There's no doubt about it, your people is getting unionized. And I am going to stay away." And say, "You better believe it. You better stay away." He said, "From this area, I'm probably going to the north." But like I said, Georgia was humongous, so we went to the north to organize the Georgia. He was over there. And he told me, he said, "I know you guys are going to win, so I better stay away from you guys." He never bothered us anymore. And he came and told my sister, he said, "I'm very sorry for what I did. I know I act so stupid. I'm ignorant, like you told me. I'm an ignorant. Just because I'm a supervisor doesn't mean that I own. And I'm very sorry." So he just walked out. He stay away from us. Okay, we finished that election, those three elections, and then we went for another grower. Finished that one. And this is in 1967. We'll finish that election. Then we went for Jimara. Then the Caesar decided, okay, let's send a group. If one person does a good job in the boycott, a whole bunch of people, a group of people, of workers, is as better to hear people outside from the farm workers worse than from a student, because we had a lot of students from San Francisco that came and helped us. And in 1967, Caesar said, "Okay, let's send a group to Chicago." And he made three groups from Chicago to New York to Florida and LA. They were just from this area. It was easy. And he said, "Let's send other people." Yeah, they sent three girls and three boys to Chicago. And to Chicago, I was one of them, and my sister.
Did you speak English yet then?
At that time, I started to learn how to speak English. And I started to learn how to read and write. Well, I went to school, but at the same time, I was learning, but not very, very well. I knew a few words, but not for a conversation, not to explain myself. So we went to Chicago, and we had one name, only one man's name, and it was from the post office workers. Eliseo Medina, it was the coordinator for our group. He said, "Okay, people, this is it. We are just going like an army. We're going to have to find out how good we are to organize. We got to Chicago in one block, we got lost. I can't remember. We went to this store, and he said, let's go inside, see how well you're going to be organized yourselves. I got to one of the stores. I knew I went to the same door to get out through the same door, but I didn't. I went to the other side. And I said, uh-oh. So he knew we were going to get lost. And he came back. He showed us how we were walking. We didn't have no cars. We didn't have no money. Just barely just started to give us $5 a week. And so,
before, when you were working, organizing out here and stuff, how did you get along? Did you eat at the Union Mess Hall, or did you eat at home? Or?
Well, yeah, I forgot about that, huh? We had a place where we went to eat. First, we didn't have nothing. We didn't have anything for coffee. All we knew, we were just getting into the Union. We didn't have no food. Okay. But then we decided we needed a place that we were going to go and eat. So right by the 40 acres, it's a place, an old place, that I don't know, and I never asked how did they got at that place to get to there. We did meetings every afternoon from the strikes. And from the coming from the picket lines, they used to make meetings every afternoon, every lunchtime. And that place is a very old, you can see it still. They used to make just rice and beans. That's all we live by. And sometimes we had tortillas and sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we had flour, they used to make tortillas. And so that's how we survived. We didn't have nothing. Sometimes we didn't have coffee. In the cold winter, we didn't have no coffee sometimes because we didn't have money to buy it. Then came to the time that they said that we were going to have to get into the AFL-CIO. That's when we start getting a little bit more food. Because organizations from San Francisco, L.A., everywhere, other places, the students, organizations, they bring some food to us. But because of the unions, they pass the words and they pass the students, they told them we need some food. So they bring them us some food, some clothing and everything. That's how we survive. And then a little bit later, we start getting $5. $5 a day, a week. This is when we had it. We didn't have it. We didn't got it. And especially when we start having people that are going to the boycott, we couldn't because we didn't have no money. The people that the very first people they started going over there to the boycott, we got in there, and for months we didn't got $5. We had to pick it up ourselves. We had to find ourselves to how to survive. In the boycott over there, we stayed from January, February, March, April, May, June, July, and August. Sister decided that we needed to get another. Another ideas how to organize the boycott. Well, the first ones that we went over there, we had already more ideas what we were doing. So then he said, okay, now we're going to send a bus with some people. And we're going to put I figure it was just like a class that they were giving us in New York. And they sent the bus over there. And we went over there, and some people got the idea how to organize. And some people, they didn't. They were older. But they were good for us because when we were going to the meetings, we said, this is what we need, you know. People like this ones right here, they didn't went to school or that they can communicate very well, you know. We need some communication. We need discipline. We need, and we have to learn it from you. So that's how I get into it. When we came back from Chicago, Caesar said, okay, let's see how you guys did it. And he used to make some classes. The classes that, how we were going to organize that town. Getting ideas. I like asking us. Say, for example, they asked me, Doña, if you go to Chicago back again, how are you going to do it to organize the boycott? Well, I said, well, people is new for the boycott. People doesn't know what a boycott means. We need some leaflets. I told him my ideas how to go. And he figured, okay, maybe she's good for being an organizer. And they put us that way.
When you were in Chicago, what was a typical day like for you? You get up in the morning, what would you start doing?
Okay, the typical way in Chicago for us, it was to contact the organizations, trying to get to the head person and trying to explain them what we wanted from them and what we expect from them to help us.
The grocers?
First, we went to communicate with the people. Mm-hmm. Okay? Communicating to the people, then we were going to communicate to the stores. And then when we already communicated with the people, we went to the stores and said, I'm a representative from the United Farm Workers. We're boycotting certain brands of the grapes. Okay? The company or the manager says, who you are to tell me what to take off out of my store or what to sell? We said, well, we're asking you. We got some support, and don't feel bad if we put a picket line outside and they're going to stop buying your product. Well, they used to be angry. They used to come out, you can't do that. It's against the law. I said, no, it's not against the law. The long as we are not stopping your traffic, as long as we got the law in our hands, too, we got the right to do it. And this is how we went and do that boycott.
So you started with the community organizations like the churches and the unions?
To get in touch with them, yes.
Uh-huh.
The churches because... The churches, they had a lot of people that can listen to us, especially if we were going to the church and pass the leaflet. They didn't turn around and throw it to us. But if we went to the store, they did it. The customers, they didn't listen to us. And the church, they did, you know. But we start organizing the priests in order for them so they can put the leaflets in there. And then we went to the stores. They didn't want it. We put a picket line. We did it. Well, it came to the...
And you were... That was 67?
67.
So you were about 22 or 23 then?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we were already controlling the markets, the supermarkets, not to buy the grapes. We did a pretty good job. I mean, saying to myself, it's a pretty good job because then we heard that we got sued against the union. And it's hurting. And we said, we're doing it. We're doing something because it's getting hurt. You know, it's they doing something back to us. So that means they get hurt. Caesar said, come back. And... We're going to have another meeting. We came and got another meeting, and coming in January, sometime in January, he said, we decided we're going to send another group of people to New York. This is in New York. Got to New York, we were 35. And
In January or February,
somewhere
around.
Did
that cold surprise you a little bit?
Yes, it did. Yes, because we were going to those places and we never seen the snow.
Uh-huh.
And it was cold. We had colds, but we never thought that was going to be that cold. But we already knew. Some of the people, they were already knew, like myself, my sister, Eliseo Medina, Joe Cerda, a few of them, Francisco Garcia, Alberto Garcia. We already knew that there was the snow, you know, because we already went to New York, Mami Tua, Chicago. Mm-hmm. We did in Chicago, and there was cold weather there. I mean, you're talking about be cold. Chicago is the worst place, and I guess in all United States, it is cold.
I grew
weather.
Up by there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was very cold, and I was there. I was there in Chicago, and by that time, they had a couple of times that I, or not a couple of times, but they transferred me from Chicago. They transferred me to Toronto, Canada. Canada is the same in Chicago. It was real cold. I was there, and I didn't know. You know, there's so many language, nationalities that, oh, my God, there was nobody speak Spanish. Nobody speak, hardly they speak English. You know, speak English, but not very much. That's when I learned how to speak English. In Canada, because Canada, that was my dialect. It was just not. It's gone. So I start thinking, okay, what am I gonna do here? I can't communicate with nobody, and we had to. Well, me and Mary Moses, we stopped the grapes there. It was so strong boycott and Canada, that we stopped the grapes. The cart loads from the train, they were canceled out. That we had John Jamara Jr. went to Canada and trying to tell us that there was no such a strike, that there was no such a workers. They were involved in the strike. That all the workers that were working. And we had a show. They were asking questions to him, and they were asking questions to me. And I told him, I said, John, I said, you cannot tell me you don't recognize me. I said, because I'm one of your workers. Oh, you are students. You probably come from San Francisco. I said, no. I said, I know. I've been in your farm so many times. I know the grapes that you have. I even tell you how many seeds you got in your grapes. I said, so you cannot tell me that I'm not one of your workers. I said, my sister, she's in Chicago, and I'm here. And this is how it worked. And they stopped, that time they stopped 15 in a train. Card lots of train, 15 of one of the highest buyers of grapes. And we had so many community people that they were boycotting those grapes. They're completely, they said it's no grapes. At least one day at that time, it was no grapes in Canada, in Toronto, Canada. So we did a pretty good job. I was so happy, and I said, and I'm learning how to speak English. And you know what? Right now, I don't know if I speak very good English or not. I still have problems to speak, to communicate, you know, because sometimes you communicate and you're thinking your words and it doesn't come out right. And they said, something happened right there. Yeah. So by that time I already knew all the weather and everything. So in New York came up to me, it was not a surprise anymore. In New York, especially the people that we were going to drive cars, Fred Rossi was with us. And Fred Rossi figured, okay, I got my drivers. I've got to teach him how to drive in the city of New York. And I tell you, my heart, it was hard. And he said, I need some drivers. They're going to have to learn how to drive in New York. I said, for sure, it's not going to be me. And he said, for sure, it's going to be you, and you're going to start it right now. You're going with me now, today. Right now, today? See ya. You know what? He lost me for 2 hours. I can't find my way back. Told him, how am I going to go back home? So find your way. I said, no, I can't. I need the help. I need your help. You teach me? Yes. The following day, I got me a car. The Seafairs give us a few cars, rental cars. We're staying in their building. And I said, okay. New York is not the end of the world. I have to know how to drive in New York. I got me my map, and I marked the place where I stay, where I was at, and I marked, and I said, I'm going to go see how bad driver I'm going to be. I went to Manhattan, and I think I went to Bronx. And coming back, it was the problem. So I stopped in Manhattan, and I went to the gas station, and I told the man, I said, you know what? I am lost. He said, me too. And I said, no. I'm from California, and you cannot be lost. You're from New York. And he said, let me see. You lost? And I said, yes. I said, how can I get the Brooklyn Bridge? He said, oh, young girl, you're not lost. He said, just go this corner, turn around, and go straight, and that's the Brooklyn Bridge. He said, you want to buy it? And I said, it's for sale. He said, yeah. I said, I don't want to buy it. It's in New York. He said, well, they always buy the Brooklyn Bridge. I said, but not me. I'm from California. So I went. I guess it took me 2 hours, 3 hours and a half to find me up my way to go home. And from there on, Fred Rose, he figured she's good for it. And I stay in New York. And I stay for a year in New York to boycott grapes. Then the pressure of all these people, meetings and all that, I'm not used to this, all these people. I start having problems. Am I nervous? They send me back. I came to San Francisco. I stayed back and I said, no, I have to end up. My end of my mission, it has to be end up in the East Coast. So a little bit later, there were another group of were going to East Coast, and I ended up to Pennsylvania. And I stayed there. That was my last year. I stay in Pennsylvania. I work there. I organize there. And that time I decided I was going to get married. I finally find a man that I was going to get married. And it was in 1970. And that was the time that also they called Caesar that they were going to negotiate for the contracts. So I told Caesar, I said, since you're negotiating the contracts, he said, this is it. I'm going to get married. He was my godfather in my marriage.
So you there was a Union man that you married?
Yes, it was a merchant marine. He was a seaman.
Oh, he was a seaman.
A seaman.
And you came back out here then?
And I came back over here to marry him. Yeah, I came over here. And then I didn't leave the Union. I went, since he was a merchant marine, he was seaman, we went to Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. And by that time, the contracts over here signed and everything, you know, so everything was going on really good. And Salinas came up the strike for the lettuce. Mm-hmm. And they start sending people to the boycott. And I end up helping in the boycott in Seattle, Washington. By that time, I was pregnant with my son, and I helped to keep, I think it was about seven people they stayed at my house for that boycott. I was helping them to get the contract again. And but it's a lot in my story. It's a lot of that I forgot, and a lot of them that I didn't even mention it. But that's a lot of sacrifice and a lot of suffering, a lot of... when it was really something, because in 1968, I believe it was 1968, that's when they started doing the building and the 40 acres. Mm-hmm. That was when we were going to go back again to the boycott. We went with a small tractor, Caesar, and a few girls and a few boys, and we went and throw the dirt in there. And Caesar sit down and he said, "And guess what, kids?" And we told him, "What? This 40 acres. There's going to be a building where we're going to have a meeting. And that side over there is going to be a clinic. And that side over there is going to be retirement homes for the people that are going to be retired. And it's going to be a central of to help people that come and fix their income tax, or they fix when they don't know how to read or write." We sit down and we look at him and we said, "It's going to be taking forever. It's going to be forever." He said, "What do you mean forever?" I said, "Yep." Then he said, "Ross, we're going to start it. We're going to start it, and we're going to finish part of that building. Maybe we're going to finish it off, all of it. Maybe you're going to be able to see everything. Maybe you're not. But we're going to start it." At that time, I turned around and I said, "Caesar, come on. We cannot do that. We don't have any money." He said, "No." He said, "We always different ways to do things. You're going to sell cookies, you're going to sell candies, you're going to sell this and that, and you're going to sell popsicles." I said, "My God." it was something that we never thought that it was going to be a humongous, tremendous, I will say, a tremendous organization or union. Because I said to myself, "We didn't do this. We thought we were just a group of people, you know." And one year, they did the 16 de septiembre, and they said, "We're going to get all this